Do you trim your beard?
No, I just brushed it.
Oh, very nice of you. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. That's Ian Ferguson.
It's me.
I'm Pat Contry. We're going to have a shindig of a show. We're going to talk about today on the podcast. We're talking about the Nintendo Super Mario 35 Switch was announced. Otis Collectible Sharing App / Site. Arcade 1-Up announcements. Haven't done that in a while. There's a bunch of them. Patreon poll topic. Maybe some voicemails. Ian, what did you do this weekend?
What did I do this weekend?
Besides ponder the end of our republic.
I did a lot of that. Did a lot of pondering of the end of the republic. America is a failed experiment. But other than that...
It's already failed. It's done.
Yeah.
We're done. Pack it in. Pack it in. You were wrong, Jefferson.
Other than that, Vonnie and I started watching Avatar: The Last Airbender. Everyone has been telling us to watch that forever, and I mean, I don't know. We're nine,
has he been
ten.
There? Yeah, he's like magical powers.
Yeah,
like Storm.
Yeah, he's got magical powers. Okay. You know, we're like 10 months into this whole thing. We're running out of things to watch. So
10 months? Oh, I thought you meant it was 10 months long. I was like, we're on season 74 by now.
No, I'm talking about COVID. I was like, so we might as well just start watching things people have recommended to us. I bought 15 pounds of chicken wings for the chest freezer, so that was exciting.
How's the chest freezer?
That's great. It's great. I love it. I love being able to buy large quantities of food when it's on sale and then keep it.
Throw some turkeys in there for Thanksgiving. They're on sale.
It's great.
Stock up.
No, other than that, though, honestly, I don't think I did anything exciting. I had my first burrito of 2021 yesterday.
I have. You know what? I don't think I have. I've had. Oh, no, I did a Mexican. We'll get into, but not from a place.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Vonnie and I had to run to the post office, and anytime I go down to the post office, I hate going to the post office. My reward is Nico's, because Nico's is just like one block over.
A couple blocks away.
That's my favorite burrito, so we went and got it.
What type did you get?
California.
You went California. I think I still have not had a California burrito.
Oh, God. There. Really? You need to. Yeah,
we had too much. A little too much.
We had Californias, and we sat in the car and watched the insane amount of maskless people in Ocean Beach.
Even on the street?
Yeah. It's crazy down there.
Young, old? Or...
Old and young. I'm just happy we don't have a store down there anymore. It would be...
Is it where the convergence of like just laissez-faire hippie attitude with just old people just...
It's old right-leaning libertarian hippies. That's what it is. And
a lot of libertarian hippies?
And I've
met a couple.
I could not tell you a group of people that care about others less than old libertarian
hippies. '60s or 70-year-old hippies.
We got ours. Those assholes.
This is we fought for our rights. It's the American spirit for not to wear masks of thing.
Fucking hate them.
I told you about my running with the one at the swap meet, right? Who basically was a neo-Confederate. And basically said, well, it was the spirit of the Confederacy of rebellion. Like, I was just like, that's literally out of the neo-Confederate playbook, you're just parroting, sir. I got in an argument, swap meet. That was like, a few months ago. Like, this is someone I'd known for years. And that reared his ugly head. And I was like almost yelling at him. The other guy next was just like, what? Not yelling, but I was like, I got heated.
I'm sure there are some nice old hippies out there, but the majority...
Frank
is great. But the majority of old hippies are incredibly frustrated.
They're selfish.
They're
selfish.
Very,
people.
Very selfish.
And that's the spirit of the wannabe hippies in college when I was coming up. They were the most selfish fucking
very
people.
Very selfish people.
They pretend to be the nicest people ever, but it really was, but hey, dude, yeah, sorry I'm playing my music at 3 a.m., but hey, I want to have fun. I don't care if you want to sleep. It's like, fuck you, dude. You're a fucking asshole. And drop this pretentious, I'm a fucking hippie in college bullshit. You're just a douchebag who wants to do whatever he wants. It doesn't care about the people trying to fucking sleep next door who has a fucking exam at 9 a.m. Sorry, flashback. That happened a lot with me, stuff like that. Yes. I hate that shit.
I see the meme.
I don't care how much weed you smoke to make you feel like you're a sweet, gentle person. You're not. You're an asshole. You're a selfish asshole.
I can see the meme forming. It's the one hand coming in and it says Pat, and then the other hand coming in and it says Ian, and then in the middle, just eating hippies.
We do the Predator?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. That always bothered me going back to college. It really always bothered me, those sort of people.
Living in Ocean Beach completely destroyed me on those type of people.
It's the sort of thing, well, it doesn't bother me, why should it bother you attitude?
Yes.
It's the most selfish attitude you can possibly have. Yes. I'm not offended by it. You shouldn't be offended by it. It's like, what? What are you, crazy? It's not how things work. Anyway, sorry. So I made tacos with my friend. I wrapped the present for her. I hadn't seen her in almost a couple months. So nice. She came over. We went and we got... It was like we played couple. We went and got taco stuff. We got the corn, the little corn tortilla street taco sauce. It's like 30 for $2, like one of those. And she's vegan, so she got this unfortunate... I tried it. It was okay. This, like, in a sausage-shaped vegan thing, you squeeze out the tube.
Oh, soy rizo is fucking delicious. Chorizo. I love that stuff.
I think you have to make sure it's, like, singed a certain way. I had it. It was okay. She said this brand was not as good as another brand she had. So she got that, and I got pollo asado from the deli, and then there was, I got a little bit of chopped meat. And then we made our own guacamole, which I hadn't done forever.
No.
It's like so easy to do. Like, why am I not making guacamole every single week of my life? Why am I not doing it? It's so healthy for you and good.
You literally just peel the avocado, add some seasonings, and smash the shit.
You don't have to peel the avocado. You just slice it in half and you scoop it out.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, it takes a second.
Remove the case from the avocado, add some seasonings.
But you don't have to remove the case, though. You just scoop it.
It comes out like an ice cream scoop.
Sorry.
You're removing it from the case, then. Better? Okay. Yeah. Not removing the case from the avocado.
But then they had the freshly baked tortilla chips there.
Those are good.
They're so much better. You can just taste the pure lard on them.
Mm-hmm.
Intermittent fasting.
Lard really does a number on fried foods. It's so good.
So we did that. We got we went all out. We got the little string lettuce already prepared, and we got, we got that, what's the best salsa, that local
Shreddy
one?
Boys.
That local salsa that's really good. That lasts like 6 days because there's no preservatives. You've seen it in the store. There's a white top on it.
I've had it.
It's delicious.
I can't remember. Yeah.
So we did all that and we had fun. Then with the leftovers, I had like leftover tuna. So I thought, okay, I'll have tuna tacos. So that's what I did. Then I also, though, the heat's down on my place.
Sorry, I really need to stress you have to try soy rizo again. Try a different
I have brand. It. I did try frying some. It's like a... I picture more of a breakfast food.
Oh,
I'll give it the rest to you.
You scramble it. The main way to do chorizo is you got to scramble it up in an egg.
Okay, I'll try that. Okay.
Scramble it up
in an egg. So the heat's out right now at Castle Country. I think hopefully it's the thermostat itself, not the furnace. So that's a big thing. But it's cold in here. No... It's cold, my fingers. So then I decided to look, because my hair's getting long, Ian. I decided to go on Amazon and look at self-cutting tips, because George Clooney was in the news about a month ago about he uses the Flobee, the vacuum thing. You know, it's a thing. It's a suction system with a scissor thing inside, and there's a plastic thing, so you get your hair a certain length all the way around. I don't want to use a Flobee, though. It's just something weird to wheel the vacuum into the hallway near the bathroom. But there's something called the AirCut self hair cutting kit that I'm looking at. It's $150 though. It's expensive.
Ooh, let me take a look at this.
You plug it in,
mm-hmm.
and there's all these different lengths and angled ones too. If you want to like do an angle thing, and it's currently unavailable today. I should have bought it over the weekend. Great. So people want this thing. And there's like there's no vacuum though, so it just goes into the compartment and then it comes out. So I needed something like this. If someone has the AirCut, let me know if this is good, because 4 stars isn't bad on Amazon, but once you get to 3.9 out of 5, it's like, well, this is my hair we're talking about here. I'm sure it does an okay job, but we'll see. But I'm looking at it. But there's a lot of these out there. There's like all these companies probably making mints this year off of these vacuum attachment. So or a buzz kit, but no, I want my hair to stay longer, and you can't do that with the buzz kits, because the buzz attachments from a barber only look like maybe 2.5 inches. There's not. I need a 4-inch buzz attachment. They don't exist, so that's why I can't.
If there was a longer one, I may have already zip-a-dude my hair.
Oh yeah, why can't someone have done that? Like just do like a 5-inch or 4-inch attachment.
Probably because at that point it's just too much, and
it gets too much to
get
Yeah.
Caught. One of my girlfriends in high school, her mom had a Flobee that she used on the dog.
It worked fine, right?
Yeah, it worked, okay. Worked great for the dog.
They make pet attachments for these, like flat attachments for these for pets, too.
God, Spike would lose his fucking shit if you got near him with a vacuum. Oh, cats don't
like,
no. Oh,
most cats don't like vacuums. Fajita would run away.
Poor buddy's losing his hearing, so he'll stare at it now. It's not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Apparently that's common in white cats. But other than that, he's healthy. He's almost 18.
In white cats?
White cats.
What type of breed is he, you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
Old.
Cruel?
Cruel, yeah.
The cruel breed. Oh, 18's a good run for a cat.
It's going to be 18 in February.
That's a good run for a good old Spike, for sure. We have to talk about the riot slash potential insurrection attempt that happened. Was that on the 6th? On Wednesday?
Wednesday.
I don't know. I thought about, do we need to do something separate? We don't talk about politics a lot in the podcast directly. We bring up things here and there. But it's a pretty significant day, all in all. I think it's the worst day we've had since 9/11.
Yeah.
For sure. Like for sure. And you can make an argument that it's somewhat worse in a way because it wasn't foreigners attacking us. It was from within. So it was civil.
In terms of it, yeah, I would say in terms of an attack on the country, the worst day since 9/11.
Because, but obviously it wasn't the huge number of deaths. It was 5 deaths total, 2 police officers, one who killed himself a few days later. We're not sure because if it's related directly out of shame or something effect, but one killed directly, and then there was a lot of officers, dozens were injured. Protecting the Capitol, basically. They were like a line of defense. And then you had a local resident shot and killed trying to get into the hallway where the vice president and the Speaker of the House and vice president-elect were somewhere in those rooms there. So it was a federal agent or Secret Service. We're not sure yet. Shot and killed a local resident here, a woman that served in the Air Force and, you know, went down this dark path the past years. And ended up getting shot and killed over fucking nothing, over lies.
After taking a vow that is completely antithetical to what she did.
Yeah, so that's why. It's like, wow. It's someone that, you know, lived like probably 10 minutes away from us. They're literally in the community. And so, yeah, so it hit harder with that. I don't, this is not going to be an easy healing process at all. It's not going to be you have a lot of people that have been told, what's the phrase, fantastic lies. If you've ever seen the documentary about the Duke lacrosse players that were railroaded, the phrase is you've all been told some fantastic lies, and that's what's been happening with a huge portion of the populace. Fantastic lies about what's been happening with the election, and, you know, basically the culmination of 4 years or 5 years of the leader of the country saying everything's a lie, I'm telling the truth, it's only me, and believe me, don't believe your eyes or your senses, everything's a conspiracy and they're out to get me, and, you know, a portion of the population gets swept away with it. And I don't see how to recover easily for something like this besides just sort of marching forward and holding these people accountable, especially the ones in power, like a couple of senators that foment this sort of these feelings when they know it's not proper to do that, but they don't give a shit because all they care about are their political ambitions.
Yeah. I think what it really showed me, and it's a strange journey to follow this thought process in my head. I remember when Trump was elected, thinking that it was going to come to this, something was going to happen like this before he left office, and I remember being told by pretty much all aspects of the news media that it was overreaction, that could never happen here, that, you know, this wasn't going to occur. And I started to second guess myself and wonder, you know, maybe if I was feeling a little hysterical about having, you know, a genuine 100% racist idiot in the office. And I started to think that a lot of what he was saying was it seemed so unbelievable to me that no one could truly necessarily believe what he was saying. They were simply allowing him to say these things so that, and they went along with them for
political expediency.
For political expediency.
A little bit closer.
Also to support and to further their own beliefs and their own ends. So even if what he was saying was idiotic, well, he's against immigrants, so I'm going to go with it.
It's what my base wants.
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
But it showed really just how many people had chosen to truly believe this. And that was the fallout that I had a tough time grasping in the couple days that followed, was the amount of people who truly thought they were going there to be some sort of fucking hero. That they thought they were going to be carried on the shoulders of this new government, that they were truly...
They were storming the Bastille.
Yeah, they really thought they were storming the Bastille.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, to see these people afterwards act so confused that they're not being welcome, it shows just how deep down that hole they went. And these are adults. They were told at many turns by as many people as possible that this was a bad idea, and they chose to believe it, and it kind of willed this into existence. I think they need to be held accountable. I think also, as Pat said, people in power need to be held accountable. This is not a situation we can just walk away from. And for as many people who, like I said, were adults and made these choices of their own to keep going down this rabbit hole and to go to the Capitol on Wednesday and try to seize it. You have people like Ted Cruz. I hope to God Ted Cruz is politically ruined for the rest of his life. I mean, just talk about an absolute dumpster fire piece of shit.
He's just a slime ball. Literally, Trump called his wife ugly and accused his father of killing JFK.
Yep.
And Cruz.
And he can't get his nose out of the president's ass. He just can't. He can't kiss his ass enough.
And now this worm Noah Hawley, there's a picture that's going to haunt him with his fist raised to the rioters.
Oh yeah,
you go. The other senators, Josh Hawley, not Noah. The other senators even said no, he knows what he's doing. He knows this is bullshit. That the election was stolen. But it's for his political expediency and for his career. Like, he knows better. So that's the worst. So he knows better. He's just doesn't give a shit. Well, he doesn't care.
And that's where we're at. Most of these people knew better.
Doesn't care that there were people literally chanting "Hang Mike Pence," coming for him. Like, is this out of a fucking movie?
Right.
Is this out of a movie?
Well, that's the other thing. I think a lot of them thought they were being fucking action stars in their own movie about taking back America.
But do you imagine if something like this happened? If they harmed a member of Congress or the vice president, who, by the way, I mean that's why there's going to be impeachment again, because the president before it invokes them to go march to the Capitol for it's your rights, and it's like, what the fuck are you sending? Are you putting out a hit on the vice president? Is that what this looks like?
That's
potentially.
And that's another example of just how spineless these people are. They're so afraid of repercussions that could harm their political futures that Mike Pence won't even invoke the 25th Amendment, and his life was literally on the line.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's coming out about, the National Guard took 90 minutes to get deployed when they were begging for the National Guard to come out.
I remember watching that live. They would not send out the National Guard.
And it's like, I guess I took it for granted. Like, why wouldn't the National Guard have been pre-deployed if they knew these people were going to be here? I just took it for granted that they would have beefed up security. So when I saw this happening, I'm like, why is there no one there to stop this from happening when they knew this was a possibility? So it was inviting it to happen. And the Capitol Police are like, yeah, they some of them are being held accountable for potentially either letting these people in some areas. But so you have some shit happening with some of the Capitol Police. You have calls to the Pentagon to deploy a National Guard, which doesn't happen. They're like, they're basically huddled saying, "Hey, help us," and nothing's happening.
And they had no end game, the people who went up there.
Well, I think some wanted to kill the vice president. I think they would have done it, or Pelosi. I think they would have done this. I really think it would have happened.
Sure, but then what? I'm talking about the politicians who are egging this on. Like, they know that at some point it's got to transition over to how much are they trying to they want to show themselves as going down with Trump, but at some point this is what's going to.
Well, I think it got. I think Hawley and Cruz were like, okay, they didn't think it would potentially be this bad. They're just stupid. They're like, oh, okay, well, we're going
to... No, they wanted to sound tough, and they assumed that the base that they secretly hate in private anyways wasn't going to actually
organize crazy.
When there's
a lot of crazy people.
Right.
A lot of crazy people. Not all crazy, but there's a lot of crazy people. Once you say to yourself, I'm going to storm the Capitol, you're crazy. You're a lunatic at that point, and you should be in prison. And so it's going to be months and months and months of the FBI tracking these people down. They're already starting to do that. They got all your cell phone signals. They know who you are. They know who most of these people are. It's just going to take time to get all these people. This is going to take time. It's a shame. The picture of a guy fucking carrying the Confederate flag in the Capitol. I was sick to my stomach. Sick to my fucking stomach. That didn't happen before, ever. No one with a Confederate flag walking through the halls of the fucking Capitol building. Didn't happen during the Civil War. That never happened.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that side ever say anything about fucking disrespecting the flag ever again.
Or disrespecting the police.
Yeah, or disrespecting the police.
Since
obviously,
we have
that's a
big
one too.
Dozens of courageous Capitol officers that literally they're getting swung at with weapons, and they're fending like they're storming a castle. They're trying to fend it off. It's insane. It's insane. And before you say, well, what were you talking about? The rioting happening in the summer. I was like, I'm like Joe Biden. I'm not for the rioting anywhere or people enacting violence or burning down anything. Everyone has to be treated equally under the law, equal protection and equal application of justice. That shouldn't be controversial, but I'm saying it in case you're going to come at me saying that. So
my take is also there's a big difference between a bunch of fucking idiots storming the Capitol over a fair election. Than people who are protesting their people being shot and killed in the street by cops all the time. You can't make the equivalency between the two.
No, but once it turns to violence... bets are off. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're burning down a local business, El Cajon, or at that point, you don't have an argument anymore. Sorry. I'm sort of zero tolerance on violence, and that shouldn't be controversial. Zero tolerance. You don't get a say anymore at that point. Go put your ass in jail. Don't ruin people's lives or businesses or fuck up things. Don't cosplay in any way, shape, or form. Don't cosplay as an anarchist. Don't cosplay as a revolutionary. Don't cosplay as an insurrectionist. Just nothing. That's how we fucking move on. We throw all these assholes in jail and say, no violence. We're law and order. That's where it's law and order. No fucking violence. And it shouldn't be controversial to say that. So anyway, that's all I got to say about that. I mean, I literally called Trump a demagogue carny back in summer 2016. Most people had him pegged, or a lot of people had him pegged.
Oh, yeah.
And then I guess it's good that this was finally the last straw for a lot of people. I couldn't bring him up to my dad last time on the phone because he was one of those guys like, yeah, I voted for Trump because he was going to get my judges that I wanted, the federal judges and Supreme Court justices in. And probably protect his, he's always afraid of his, the stocks and 401k mutual funds. It always comes down to that. So when I try to bring it up, I say, hey, Dad, guess where the insurrection was shot, where it was from? It's like, oh, local here, Ocean Beach. And so I don't want to talk about it. So it's just like, so finally it's gone too far for some people. Like this was the short of seeing the fucking vice president being hanged, at the Capitol. This is where it was too far for.
God, I hope Lindsey Graham is never taken seriously again.
He was like, this is too far for me. It's like, fuck you. Just fuck you, Lindsey Graham. Fuck you. Sorry. What are we talking about? Video game stuff.
Games.
Game stuff. Games. All right, the eShop, Ian.
Yeah, so they have not given a reason why, but after our segment last week, and lots of people, I'm not saying our segment was responsible, I'm just saying, after we discussed this last week on the podcast, and a bunch of people took to Twitter and other social media sites to decry it, the pulled DSiWare games, for the most part, have been returned to the eShop.
Is this an update?
Guess so. Yes, it is an update. It's about 250 games, I think, they added. They said there was like four or five that still hadn't been re-added, but they were doing them in chunks. So at that point in time, maybe they were still going to be...
You mean I can't play Face Pilot, fly with your Nintendo DSi camera?
Nintendo DSi camera. So this is good. But again, just like we said last week, if you have these digital titles, if you have digital games, try to pay attention to when... companies say that they're going to be pulling them down. Nintendo didn't in this case. And don't wait until the last minute to re-download games that you are particularly fond of. You know, try to keep those on your system at all times so that you don't have to go through this. Obviously, one solution is don't buy digital. If you don't want to deal with this, don't buy digital. And as I've always said, I understand that entirely. If you don't want to deal with it, I just think that there are certain instances where, unfortunately, it can't be helped, such as with small developers who can't always do a physical run, or convenience or something like that. Just know what you're getting into when you make these digital purchases. I don't know if this was an error on Nintendo's part. That seems unlikely, but something tells me that the backlash caused them to say, maybe we can leave these up a little bit longer.
Or maybe it was a mistake.
Yeah, who knows?
Maybe there was a switch automatically. Oh, because these games come out, you know, 8 years ago. Maybe it was like, oh, 2021, and we turned it off, and we didn't think about it. Maybe. I don't know. The fact that it was so many at once is just weird. It wasn't, like, staggered more? Right. I don't know. Unless people finally noticed.
But it's a good thing. So if you had Risky's Revenge, Shantae's Risky's Revenge, and you need to re-download it, go and re-download it. Get all that stuff downloaded. Go buy your big memory cards and... yeah, save that stuff before it's too late.
But those fans of Word Searcher 3 cannot complete the trilogy. Sorry. Yeah, it's still... Or 5-1 Solitaire. Still not there.
Oof.
That's a rough one.
It sucks because there's no other Solitaire games in existence.
None. All right. How about this play pause for surprise mechanics? Stop whoever's... I'm turning my phone off.
Yeah, turn your phone off. Patrick, pay attention.
Okay. So anyway, this is something interesting that someone brought to our attention. So there's a play pause program where...
Say that five times.
Play pause.
Play pause program.
In Pennsylvania, it's a self-exclusion tool for online gambling because online gambling is totally legal in Pennsylvania. Please come to California. Anyway, so it's something where like if you go out of state or, you know, you basically it's like locking up your fridge if you're trying to be on a diet. That's basically what it is for gambling. So... The argument is
fridge lock.
They just sell those, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I don't think they lasted because everyone was like, these are horribly cruel. And I mean, people were just crowbarring them off the fridge.
Hey, you signed up for that. Anyway, so the play pause program in Pennsylvania, they're going to expand it to other self-exclusion bubbles. So as players move from state to state, the protection that they ask for can also move with them. So anyway, so the whole point is this. Could something like this work for loot boxes and quote-unquote surprise mechanics, as you would say, in video games? Should there be a program that will say, you know what, I want to self-exclude myself from buying this garbage. When I buy a game, that's it. I pay $60. I don't want to buy these outfits. I want to buy these, gachapon. What are they called?
Gotcha mechanics.
Gotcha mechanics.
Based on...
No chance
machines.
Bullshit. Yes. No gambling. Should there be a program for that? Is that the next step? And mandatory for each game to be like, here's a button or something, a code you put in for you or your kids where you're excluded from the ability to do this. Why not? I think that'll be the future. It's not a bad idea.
I feel like being able to turn it off, I think we kind of talked about this before, being able to have almost like a parental setting within a game that no, my child or I personally, yeah, am not allowed to access any of these modes that would take more money from me. I think that's an option that should be included if you feel like you can't stay away from it. The only problem is with so many of these sports games, those big modes are, you know, a lot of them are reliant on that. So you have to be... They would need to, I think, advertise what you would be missing clearly on the back of the box if you were to opt into this program, because you'd lose large chunks of the game.
Well, you shouldn't lose the ability to play and complete a game, you know.
No, you'd still be able to play and complete it, but you wouldn't be able to partake in some of the most popular modes.
Okay, well, that's, to me, that's a little bit different than buying a mode versus the gambling aspect. I guess that's what it is, where you're constantly buying the card packs.
I didn't say buying a mode. I'm saying can't participate in some of those modes unless you have the card packs.
Well, then that's other.
Is a reason for the cards. They're not just to look at.
Well, that's legislation that's going to come down the road. It's already starting to happen in Europe. That'll come eventually, I think.
But I do think an option to be able to just kind of wipe away the.
Sure. I make it difficult to put back on. You gotta call a number. You gotta be on hold for an hour. You know what I mean? you can put it back on, but it's gonna be a pain in the ass, for sure. You know, it's not a pain in the ass, Ian. Going to ultimatenintendo.com, where you can order See Podcast enamel pins, Pat Punk enamel pins, RBI baseball stickers, flying off the shelf, flying off the table. With this is the scissor I cut them with. And also the certain NES Super Nintendo guidebooks. And on sale right now, the My Man See a Podcast shirt. It's only, I think, $15. And then for only, I think it's like $12, it's like 45% off the Pat the NES Punk Volume 3. Ah, my remote for my heater. There you go. So you can get all these goodies right now. Ian's happy about it.
I'm thrilled about it.
Do you want an RBI baseball sticker for the back of your... Oh, there's no room in the back of your...
There's no room anymore. Otherwise, I'd consider it.
I haven't made a dent in this. I haven't made a dent in the roll. I was like, I'll keep it for posterity. Get it. No, sell them. People like the stickers.
It's heavy.
I've sold like 100 of them, at least. And they're still, it's thick. Thick and quick right there. And then on Wednesday night, I'll be on Twitch looking at 80s commercials. It was weird looking at 80s commercials literally right after the insurrection attempt. But people needed the break.
I'm sure it was strange. Yes.
It was a little strange.
We had fun talking about our past insurrection experiences that we remember as children. Remember the insurrection of 92 that was attempted? 2008 insurrection attempt? Oh, it was great. We just reminisced. Giant Lego. GBA was discovered.
Yeah.
like the monoliths in the desert.
And no one knows where it came from. Where was this found?
Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah, Australia.
Good day.
Found in Australia. People don't know if it's like if it was like
it's Daco. Daco was his name, not Dago. Know. Daco.
Daco. If it was used as a prop piece in a store or something like that.
It's huge, but it's huge.
It's very big.
It's beefy.
Looks like it was all epoxied together. Game on the back, it says where the serial number and the label would be. It says Game Boy Advance SP, Nintendo,
swivels
made
open
in Windsor.
And, shut. Yeah.
And then it says, I don't know, KT and IW 04. So I'm guessing that's when it was made.
People have probably made it their initials.
Yeah, so I don't know if this was like an official project for some sort of store or what, but they did a really good job with it. It opens up and everything. It's got giant buttons.
Yeah.
We're talking... We're talking probably about 2 feet by 2 feet.
Some Ian measurement?
Yeah, a foot and a half by a foot and a half. I don't know.
Oh, it's more than a foot and a half.
Yeah, 2 feet. 2 feet by 2 feet.
2 to 3 feet. Yeah.
Big boy.
Made 2 feet. It's a big boy. It swivels open. Obviously, it's not functional. It's not like the old school Game Boy display with a giant Game Boy.
Yeah, no, not functional.
That would be awesome if it was. But, yeah. I guess I haven't seen. There's no comments on the video about it. It's got
no. There isn't.
It's got 629 views from sleeping usering. Acquired this in a retro game collection today. Cannot find anything online about it. Found in Melbourne, Australia. So assuming it's a Meijer, Toys R Us, Target, Big W. I'm not sure what that is, or Kmart store display from back in the day. But if it's an official store display, it would be marked in Nintendo's sort of catalog of display pieces. Like the M series, like the M82, the M series is like the display marketing pieces. So yeah, this is and it would be marked that it's a Nintendo, and it's not marked that it's a Nintendo official product. So it's a mystery, Ian. Where's my unsolved mysteries? No. Without the update, need one. You want to return to Castle Monkey Ball, Ian? I just think this is funny. So
a few people brought this to our attention. It's kind of interesting. There is
a mashup
Monkey Ball Wolfenstein game was made. So Monkey Ball, if you're somehow unaware, is a popular game that Sega made.
He brings it up every other week at this point.
It's super fun. You roll around as a monkey in a ball. You have to collect bananas and get through a goal. It's like Marble Madness. It's really, really difficult. And Wolfenstein, of course, the classic first-person Nazi shooter of yore. Kill the Nazis.
BJ Blazkowicz.
So in this game that mixes them together, BJ Blazkowicz is in a monkey ball.
And he's tiny.
Yeah, he's tiny. And you roll them around the Wolfenstein maps, collecting bananas and bumping into Nazis to kill them. When you bump into them, they die just as they did in the original.
Do they shoot at you or they don't shoot at you?
That I can't quite tell. I haven't had a chance to try this. I've been playing through some cheap and free indie games lately, and I haven't gotten to this, but it's on my list. So yeah, check that out if you like either of those games or just want to see something interesting.
Yeah, I mean, God, it's a fantastic stuff that's going on here. You think we're going to see a new Punch-Out game?
I don't think we're going to see a new Punch-Out game, no.
So the news is that Mike Tyson was on the, I hate this name with all my heart, Impulsive with Logan Paul. That's the name of his podcast. Get it? Because his name is Paul.
Yeah, I
Impulsive.
Get it.
Paul, yeah, the eight. Anyway.
Yeah, I fucking get it.
So Mike Tyson said that we're going to make another one. So you might, but probably not with Nintendo, I'm guessing. I'm guessing Nintendo doesn't want to associate with Mike Tyson anymore. I'd probably not. And you probably don't have the rights to use the name Punch-Out either. So I don't know if it'll be like Mike Tyson's Puncher Game. Because there was an app. That tried it. It was taken off the App Store, really lickety split. I can't even re-download it.
Really?
But there was a Punch-Out type of game that was probably not licensed, you know? Anyway, so...
Yeah, I just don't see them, like as you said, I just don't see them wanting to do the... to work with Mike Tyson. They already said that they... I mean, remember, they didn't want to work with Kanye West. We talked about that last week. I don't see Nintendo as being particularly eager to do...
Any celebrity stuff.
Yeah, any celebrity stuff. And that's where I'm going with it. I just don't see that as really being their thing anymore. They have celebrities and whatnot in commercials, but I don't think they're actively looking to get these names on games.
They don't need it. Further, they don't need it.
Right.
I mean, let's just say theoretically, the next Punch-Out game, which there has been one now in, 12 years? What was Punch-Out? 2009 or so? They do another Punch-Out game. Everyone's going to buy it anyway. I mean, putting Mike Tyson on it, you're going to get some of the older millennials like us to be like, oh, we're going to buy it now. Either you buy it or you don't. There might be like some people who might buy it just for Mike Tyson, but if that's really what's going to push over the edge to buy a new Punch-Out game at this point.
Doubtful.
Yeah, don't think so. I never played the Wii Punch-Out game. Never played
it's really good.
Never played it.
Yeah, it's great.
Why is it? Can Nintendo, I'm not saying you got to put out every 2 years you have, use your B-list properties for new games, but F-Zero sitting there, Punch-Out sitting there.
F-Zero's sitting there, and F-Zero really needs to be worked on. The guy, I can't remember his name, the guy at Sega who worked on the GameCube one said, he's like, I would be opposed to doing that again. You just gotta come talk to me.
Star Fox, we're waiting on a Star Fox game, and they'll probably just redo the Wii U one that no one played. You know, so... But wait, there's other properties you can make. Come on, Nintendo. What are you doing? What are you doing here? You're gonna put out a freaking Fire Emblem NES cart somehow. Which is insane.
Well, there was no NES. You couldn't play the cartridge.
To my point. But you're doing all this shit, and you have properties that people want. Develop games for them. Come on. Punch-Out will still sell. Come on. Let's go.
Come on.
Come on. Come on, buddies.
Return to Castle Monkey Ball was kind of fun, by the way. I played 30 seconds of it.
Of which one?
Return to Castle Monkey Ball. I just played 30 seconds.
How did you just play it?
It's in the browser.
Oh, it's in the browser? Yeah, Did we mention that?
It's in the browser.
Did you mention that?
No, I didn't.
My hair is taking over my face now. It's like crawling down my cheek. I just noticed.
All right.
Ian.
Hmm.
We're past the 35th anniversary of Super Mario Brothers, but the celebration still lives on in the best year ever, 2021. All right? So Nintendo had a couple of announcements. That look you gave me.
Yeah, they did have a couple of announcements. They're putting out a Mario 35th anniversary Switch, the blue and red Switch. It's pleasing to the eye. I like it. I like it quite a bit. And so as far it's the first Switch to have a
retail one that has a different color.
That has a different
on the
color
actual
on
Switch
the body.
Screen unit. Yes,
there was
the
Labo one that I believe was cardboard colored all around.
But that wasn't a mass release.
That was not a mass release. So I think this is the first mass release one that actually has a different colored body. Not just like an engraving or etchings on it.
Yeah.
It's solid red, comes with
a red docking port as well, docking bay.
Red docking station, and then it has some blue accents that are kind of cute. The Joy-Con grip is blue, and the slidey protector bars for the that's good English, Ian. The slidey protector bars.
Ian, see you podcast vocabulary.
For the Joy-Cons are blue as
so
well.
So it gives it a red-blue effect on the Joy-Cons, and then it comes with a cute little case with that's red with the blue zipper part and cute little yellow zippers. That's a nice little accent on there to do that.
Does it come with the case, or is the case separately? Because they're showing a blue one here as well.
The pictures have them all there, so... comes with the red and blue carrying case.
Okay. Yep. The case is red and blue.
Available on February 12th, so 1 month from now. What a coincidence. So anyway, so it's adorable. We are now, you know, you're in the middle life of a Nintendo console when they start throwing more gimmicky color shit at you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it's going to be 4 years old, the Switch, in a couple of months. You believe that? 4 years old.
It's wild.
Going to kindergarten soon. Learning to read. Nintendo Switch. Isn't that nuts? It doesn't seem like it's been out for 4 years.
No.
Has it? It doesn't seem to me.
It's been a weird 4 years for me, too, because when it came out, I was in the middle of my gut sickness, so that was a weird, like, year and a half. I think I was, like, still another...
Also, the apartment or condo. Yeah.
We've just gone through a year of pandemic, so it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, the pandemic year
it
was
has
either...
not been a normal set of years for me, at least, or in many people since the Switch came out.
2020 was either the longest year to some people, or maybe the shortest year to some people.
Very short.
To me, I can't. In my head, it's like, was it really short or really long?
No,
I didn't do anything. I didn't go to any conventions or do anything or travel. Or, you know what I mean? I went to the zoo once. Like, I didn't do anything. I didn't go out anywhere.
2020 feels very short to me in general. But if I think back to specific things that happened early on in, like the actual lockdown.
First few months.
I'm like, okay, that was a little ways away. But in terms of time passing, I've never had a year fly by quicker than this year.
That's true. That's true. So anyway, so this is a Spider-Man color scheme. Some people pointed out it's the red and the blue. Yeah, it's cute. No, like Mario face though, like etched anywhere. I just thought that was, you know, put his face somewhere in the back or put a fucking cheap sticker. The case. I think that's the other side is blue and red in the case.
One side is blue, one side is red.
Or is it two different ones?
No, it says it's a red and blue.
Oh, red and blue. Okay. Okay.
I'm glad we got to the bottom of that.
Yeah, we figured that out. We're prepared on the CU podcast. You know that.
Also announced was the Bowser's Fury mode for Super Mario 3D World. Bowser's looking hot. Just going to come out and say
he's angry.
That's a sexual turtle father right there. He's looking ripped. He's torn.
That's your side of the internet.
Hot dad alert with Bowser.
I don't get into that stuff. That's all you and your pals.
Hot dead. There's the new DLC adds apparently a level, a story, something where Bowser turns into a kaiju and a cat Mario can fight him.
A giant monster. So, spoilers, there's a giant monster fight in a Super Mario Brothers game. It's only taken us 35 years to get there.
Yeah.
Right?
Just the DLC.
Just the DLC.
But I'm excited for it. Like you mentioned earlier, Nintendo is good about announcing things and then being like, oh, hey, here it comes. They did announce that this was coming out earlier this summer when they announced the Super Mario 3D All-Stars. But they kind of just said, hey, this is coming in February and left it at that.
February.
This is the first they're kind of showing of it, and it's here in a couple of weeks. So that's nice.
Yeah,
not a long wait.
And I never played the original. A lot of people didn't. So I mean,
it's a very fun game.
That came out. Was it 2013? Was it 2000? What's this? Super Mario 3D Worlds. So a lot of people, again, going with Nintendo strategy of, hey, we're going to forget the Wii U is a thing. Rebuy these games with some add-ons. It's working great. Came out in November 2013. So it's not even a 7-year-old game that they're going to re-release with some DLC tacked on there. There you go. There's only a couple games more left to do. Star Fox is one of the big holdouts.
Star Fox, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, or not Chronicles, Xenoblade, Xeno,
It's a Xeno.
Xenoblade Chronicles X. There was one on the Wii
U. There was a Xeno.
Yeah, there was a Xeno.
That's all you need to know. There was, they skipped over Metroid, so there was no Metroid on the Wii U. Right? We skipped over it. It was on the Wii, right? The other
the
M
Wii, yeah.
That people were mad about. They're mad about they mad softened about. Up Samus a little bit too much for people.
Can I say something?
You can say whatever you want. It's a podcast. You can go for it, buddy.
This is unrelated to video games, but this upsets me. Did you see that they're doing a movie about Lucille Ball?
Yeah, I did.
Did you see who they fucking cast for Lucille Ball?
Nicole Kidman.
That just seems wrong.
Really? I think she's got some acting chops.
I don't think she's a bad actor. I think she's good. She's not. That just seems like a weird pick. I take Lucille Ball very seriously. She's from Western New York.
She's like the Three Stooges to me, to you, Lucille Ball.
Yeah, she's from Western New York. She was born in Jamestown. We take pride in her in Western New York. We count her as one of our own. I would really like to see this Lucille Ball documentary done well. I don't think Nicole Kidman is the choice for Lucille Ball. I don't have a better choice, but
she resembles her when you actually look at the eyes
and
the nose.
A little bit, yes, but when I think comedy in comedic timing, I don't think.
If you can act, if you can act dramatically, you can do comedy. I think if you're trained, you know, comedy is difficult. But I think get Javier Bardem as Ricky.
He could be all right.
He could be great.
Yeah.
Are we clamoring though to know the nitty gritty though? Of this is going to be a drama, Ian. Probably this is going to be a comedy.
It's going to be more of the drama aspect.
Behind the scenes.
I realize
fighting against the system to keep their show. The show went on for what, like 15 years between the two iterations or whatever. They did the Lucy, then it was Lucy and whatever Arnaz.
I Love Lucy, and then it was the Lucy and Desi show.
Yeah, so it went on forever.
And then there was the Lucille Ball show. She had three shows.
But this was the third show the same character? Or no? Was it?
No. It was not the same character. The second show was the one that was in full color, and it was a different character.
I never appreciated. There was tons of I Love Lucy reruns on Nick at Night in the 80s, early 90s. Because all the boomers grew up with them.
I loved them. I
never got into them. I could appreciate them looking back, but I never got into them.
I can't think of, you know, around the time that I was watching, you know, Nick at Night and that, I can't think of a show from that era that I appreciated more, or a person I guess
Lucy.
I appreciated more from that era than Lucille Ball. I love her to death.
It was on for 6 seasons, 51 to 57. Wow, to go back in time. A modified version continued for 3 more seasons with 13 1-hour specials from 57 to 60. Did not know about that. There was 13, so it was on for kind of 10 years almost. Yeah. Wow. And then what was the second iteration? Here you said
I think that's the Lucille Ball show, or was it just called Lucy?
Well, I'm looking on the Wikipedia just for the I Love Lucy. So the second one, anyway, it was on. That's a long time it was on. There, it's one of those classic TV sitcoms. You know, it's one of those ones you think of like Honeymooners. You think of I Love Lucy.
It was I Love Lucy, the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour, and then the Lucy Show.
So it kept going forever. Basically,
yeah, and it looks like she might have done a couple other like smaller things, but Lucy Show, I watched quite a bit of it. That's the one that I think had the end of the episodes were in color.
Got it. So yeah, okay. No, you know, Lucille Ball was in one of the earliest Three Stooges.
No, I did not.
Three Little Pigskins. She's like probably like 18 years old. She is super young.
Oh wow,
she's just one of like the girlfriends. You know, she's just like eye candy there. It's like her and two other blondes, and she's like, you know, looking it up. She is like. Like I'm talking, like the first thing she probably did in Hollywood. That must be like 34. Like it was. Are you looking it up?
Oh yeah, yeah. Wow, I mean, she is really young,
super young. Like you almost don't recognize her.
No, you really don't.
Yeah, before obviously her comedic stuff kicked in there. That really bothered you, huh, Ian? Well, I guess we can't make the Nintendo stuff a full topic if we segue into that.
Sorry,
but
I hope they do my girl right. That's all.
Oh wait, phrasing. All right. So we're going to start the podcast officially.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right, Ian, you know, on the City of Podcasts, our bread and butter, besides talking about insurrections, is talking about collectibles, especially when it comes to video games in the marketing, in the marketplace. Whether it was Heritage Auctions, Scumbag Sellers of the Week, people trying to put things on eBay and failing, what have you. So right now, and I'm getting, I literally got, this is how you know, Ian, you think Ian and me are scumbags or slime balls, that's fine. We had the potential to do a sponsorship with the company we are talking about, and we are submarining it and potentially burning a bridge.
Yeah.
We could have money in our pocket to keep the lights on. The heat's not happening right now at Castle Country. But there's a new collectible sharing app and website that has dropped. Called Otis. Otis. On the Otis website, Ian, it's a collectibles site where you can invest in shares of collectibles like sneakers, Pokemon cards, sports cards.
Or say right here, this 9.6 Super Mario Brothers 3, water graded.
Yes. It's a new frontier of collectibles and commodity markets, which has really sprung up past probably 2, 3, 4, 5 years, especially with what they call sneakerheads. These people that invest in sneakers, and there's marketplaces that exist just for this. But this is like, okay, I can't buy the whole shoe myself, or the X-Men number one on here right now. I'll buy a share and own a share, so then when it sells at a profit, I get a profit out of it. And that's what this website wants you to sign up and do, and the app to do that. So right now you can invest in Super Mario Bros. 3. Oh, it's not the Left Bros? Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Well, it doesn't matter what people are spending tens of thousands on these because they're insane. So you have to get 10 shares maximum. Oh, 10 share maximum per investor. It's $1 per share. So Super Mario Bros. 3 is considered this is from the listing. It's considered the first legitimate sequel. What? Fuck you. The first legitimate sequel to the original Super Mario. Did Nintendo put out Super Mario Bros. 2? Then it's a legitimate sequel.
God. God, people just can't let that fucking go. They've got to find something else to say about it.
It is the third best-selling NES video game of all time, at 17 million copies sold worldwide. The Super Mario series has been created in subsequent popular video games. Okay. Grading is important for NES games since there were a large amount of copies released. We are offering a 9.6 water-graded copy with an A-grade seal, which is the second highest grade after a 9.8. There were several production runs of the game, including earlier production with the Bros to the left, and a later one with Bros to the right. Then it talks about highlights of recent sales. A Super Mario 3 went for $21,600 in September, blah, blah, blah. The sale was for an A-plus seal. Ours is an A seal, close but not exact. Talked about how much they paid for it. So you basically get a prospectus on your quote-unquote investment. So it tells you, okay, we bought this game for $10,200 at auction, and it is dropping it at $5,000, representing 104% discount to market value. What? Otis acquired the game at auction for $10,200 and is dropping it at $5,000. I guess this is the investment we want you to basically pay back in for.
I guess so, yeah.
I guess that's what it means. And then there's cultural significance. Okay. Then there's a report. There's actually a prospectus, like you're getting a freaking mutual fund. And there's a little slideshow at the bottom, if you see that, put out by this company. So in the slideshow, you have like a quote from our pal, Richard Lecce. See how it all comes back around? From the New York Times article. To me, Super Mario Brothers or The Legend of Zelda are artworks that are far more important than, say, the Mona Lisa. Richard, I appreciate your emails, but that is not true at all and sounds a little bit nutty. Then you get an overview of it, about what it is, the price per share, the drop value. I'm going to look that up. Drop value. Can you look that up for me, Ian, what a drop value means?
Yeah.
While I read this.
Trying to figure that out.
Then they say, we believe that the category, is your stomach turning yet? Is well positioned for growth as a result of centralized grading authority, WADA, to vet authenticity and condition and increasing accessibility as more auction houses and resellers start selling NES games. We've been selling them and buying them for 20 years, over 20 years. It's just that not this graded stuff getting huge the past couple years. Why are we excited? Drop value. Otis acquired the game in an auction for $10,200 and is dropping it at $5,000. I guess that's the value of the shares that are coming in. They repeat the stuff about cultural significance and then talks about the game. NES games as a collecting category. Again, this is a slideshow. First game...
The factory sealed video game collecting category has gained significant mainstream interest in the past few years. Would you call it significant mainstream interest? Would you really call it that? I would not call it that. It first gained momentum as a niche collecting category in the late 2000s. Okay. Among avid gamers seeking to complete their sets of games using online secondary markets like eBay, motivated by nostalgia. So they want to play it too.
As best as I can determine, drop, like every other instance that it's used in like this, drop refers to the item. Drop value, I'm assuming, is that's how much value in shares they're selling.
How much value in?
Yes.
The value.
Yes, okay. The value. I'm assuming that's the value of shares put out. So so if that
other
if that Mario is 10,000 and they're valuing the drop at 5,000, that probably means they're selling $5,001 shares.
Worth of shares. Okay, yes. That makes sense. The most popular collectibles in the category are games for the NES, which popularized characters like Mario in the 80s. Okay. We believe this welcome position for growth, blah, 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 blah. Ecosystem of buyers and sellers slide. In January 2019, Heritage Auctions began listing a lot of graded video games in their comics and comic art auctions. It's only been 2 years. The incorporation of collectible video games by an acclaimed and mainstream auction house has spread awareness of the collectibles video game trend among collectors. Heritage Auctions notes, the video game collectible industry is now evolving from nostalgia. It wasn't always just nostalgia. People actually want to play these games.
Yeah.
To a recognized form of art and history. Fuck you. We always thought this stuff was historical, video games. Why do you think I have a room full of them? Not just because I like it. There's history wrapped up in some of these items. Risks. Here we go. Here's the risks they have. Relatively nascent category. Nascent or nascent?
I think it's nascent.
The factory sealed video games category is relatively nascent and has gained significant interest in only the last year. Okay, that's true. As a result, is riskier than other more established collecting categories. Okay, that's responsible to say that. Limited public data. We don't know what the population numbers of these are. Supply risk. As the category gains traction with collectors, more supply of the specific gaming grade could enter the market and impact prices. At least they're being reasonable with the risks. This is the first time I've seen any article written about this. This isn't even an article. All those articles written before never brought the fucking risks up at all.
Yep.
It's all pie in the sky. This stuff can only go up from here. Make $1 million. Get in. You know, FOMO, fear of missing out. Well, at least this is being responsible here. Because you know why? They're selling shares. So I think legally they have to put the risks on here.
So they do, because all of these... So it says... each asset on the platform has been securitized with the SEC and broken into shares. Members can buy it. So
legally.
New cultural assets are launched on the app weekly.
So once you have registered with the SEC, your company or what have you, you have to play it straight. Otherwise,
right.
if it's fraudulent... You have a government entity that can come after you. If you're a shareholder, you're like, what did you sell me? This was a fraudulent, you know, but at least they're doing that. Okay. That's all fair and good, Ian.
I think this is taking the hype market to an extreme end, and I mean, I can't stand this. I'm glad that they... Buying shares of an item. You can say that you own a part of something you may never, ever see or touch.
So it's not about collecting it. We brought this up a bit when that $100,000 Super Mario Brothers was bought by a team of five people that bought it, including Richard Lecce.
That's like a real world happening of this.
And plus they did that because they wanted to help kick off this search.
Sure.
If you don't do that and put that on Pawn Stars, do you get to this point of Otisburg trying to sell you shares of sneakers and video games? I don't know. But we're way past the point where we're now collecting stuff when you're buying shares. You're just purely speculating, and it's purely an investment. But you're trying to equate it to stocks of a company. And it's obviously not the same thing.
Right.
Collectibles is not a company being run with profit and loss. It's just you're buying the shares in the hope that some other sales happen down the road with your item, or you can, or whoever controls it sells it, and you get a higher return. That's it. I don't think you can get dividends off a collectible sitting around like a stock. I don't see how that would happen. They start spawning off mini Mario 3s. How would that happen?
I don't think you can do that.
It spawns off, I don't know, an RBI Baseball 2. So you get another game. Like, how does that happen here? This is insane to me to see this.
Oh,
I'm not shocked at all.
It's fucking wild.
I mean, I don't follow the sneaker market at all, but I know that's nuts. That's been nuts for years. And now.
Yes.
I guess you could want to do it with Pokemon cards. So we talked about this a few weeks ago about we're hitting the zenith of this weird investment thing, hitting collectibles and cultural touchstones together for this stuff, or like the old sneakers that come back, or they redo the Jordans, and for Pokemon. And it's like the perfect storm to lose your money, to me.
Yeah. It seems like a real... seems like a real bad thing to like get into right now, sitting around bored at home. I could see that getting out of control. Can't go to conventions, can't buy stuff. Just let's collect together.
Can't travel.
Yeah.
Let's put that money into buying shares of shit. Put that stimulus check to good use. buy 25 shares of Super Mario Bros. 3 sealed.
What did you buy? I own one fifth of a sealed Super Mario Bros.
I own 0.1% of Super Mario 3. So this is what's happened now. Going back to who the hell is spending money on this stuff. This website or this organization, Otis, are now in the market to increase the prices of, with other speculators in order to acquire them, so other speculators raise the prices on the products so that shareholders can make money. They're now one of the entities now, when you see these highfalutin prices, they're one of them, and there could be others that follow. The whole market gets tainted at that point to me. This isn't like, hey, we had a private sale and we purchased this. They bought it at auction to potentially put it back on auction,
right?
With people buying shares,
with more people's money behind.
So they get the money back through the shares, yes. which is that's what a corporation does. Where you're buying in, we're getting your money, and you're getting part potentially the profits, and we have more operating budget to maybe buy more shit and operate. It's a beautiful plan. I just think it's insane to invest in this stuff. It's insane to do that. Because then the risk is so much lower to this company because, well, we spent $10,000 on this game. We're going to get $5,000 worth of shares. Well, half of our investment's already, we're set there. And we'll just pay you out plus our piece of it.
Can I see the assets in person? Otis will host pop-ups and events where you can come to view your assets at our dedicated gallery space.
They won't let you touch it, probably. Hey, look at it behind the glass.
Yeah,
hey,
probably
I own $500 of that Super Mario 3. Okay, cool. That's fine. You can't own it for, you know, whatever, 5% of the year, whatever, however they price it out for the amount of shares. It won't be 100% the shares. It'll be either, what, 50% or something else, whatever percentage. I got to look at the report in details. This is nuts. And then it links to the recent news about from the New York Times. And then, there's a Vice article about someone who got 380 copies of Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt. That's not difficult. That would take you maybe a bit in 2020, but 10 years ago, you could do that in a weekend on eBay. You can get that many. So we'll not be doing an Otis sponsorship. I think it would be disingenuous to do that sponsorship. So if you complain about us, selling products we actually think are cool, like, you know, like Manscaped products or like, we turn down stuff sometimes, and it's just a coincidence that this is coming up here. But I think, unfortunately, there will be people that spend their money on this stuff and potentially will take a loss. But we're in the age of, you know, Bitcoin and buying Tesla stock and buying this stuff because you can't lose.
Can't lose.
Putting your money in on this stuff. And I'm seeing more and more people, even younger people, saying, I want to learn about investing. And it's like, okay, before you get investing, though, you have to have a stable income. Make sure you're paying off your loans and whatever debt, and you're able to save money. Once you're sort of stable, now you worry about investing. I think the problem is a lot of people nowadays treat it as, oh, it's not get rich quick, but investing to me is a form of income. It should not be a direct form of income. It should not be. It's not. You have to be established first with your income in order to then tiptoe, because you have to basically be willing to lose that money. I'm willing to take a loss now.
Yes, you have to be able to send it out and just assume that that's it.
Without it crippling your life. That's how you have to treat this stuff. Whether you're buying Bitcoin, whether you're buying WADA graded games, or any collectible, you have to make sure you are solvent first when it comes to this stuff. So, all right. Anything else to add? Are we cool on with Otis?
We're good with Otis. We're done with Otis. Done with Otis. But you know what? Arcade 1UP has just announced a whole slew of new items. News is coming out that they've got a bunch of new cabinets coming there. The big ones are an X-Men 4-player arcade cabinet, the arcade game. They're doing a Dragon's Lair with a Space Ace variant, Killer Instinct, and then
Killer Instinct.
Two that I think are interesting, or at least a slightly more interesting, the Atari Legacy Edition and the Pong 4-player Pub.
The Pub.
Console.
Pub it up.
So, Arcade 1-Up, as you know, they make cheaper, like,
three quarter scale
arcade machines in the range of $300 to $500. They use LCD screens. They're usually masked down to a 4:3 ratio. People put them together, and they've become very, very popular
over the past couple of years.
If you wait for sales and things like that, you can generally find them for relatively inexpensively at places like Walmart, and I think some of the big box shops, and people have started building small little arcades in their garages. I'm personally like pretty torn on the Arcade 1-Up stuff. I think some of it is really cool. Some of it that uses the
custom controls,
yeah, like the custom controls,
like Star Wars,
like
Arcade?
The proprietary controls,
yeah.
Yeah. So stuff like Tempest that uses a spinner, or Centipede uses a trackball. The Star Wars with the flight yoke they did is really cool. Those are nice because those are oftentimes cabinets that are more expensive to come by, and it's hard to recreate that feeling at home. You know, Centipede doesn't feel like Centipede without a trackball. Same with Missile Command. Star Wars is always going to feel better or more interesting.
The yoke
with
is
the
better.
With the flight yoke.
You can play with a joystick, but it's better with the yoke.
So that's where I think the appeal of these is, at least for me. I don't have a whole lot of interest in the ones that are just emulating, basic stick and stand up arcade cabinets. There have been some that I think are cooler, like the NBA Jam one is four players and has online modes, so you can play against people. That's one that I think is really cool. So these are interesting. I want to talk about the Atari one. So
you're talking about the Atari one first. Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
This is the one I personally want. Like, I want to own this. Not this isn't a call out for Arcade 1-Up to send me one, but I wouldn't be against it.
Yeah, this is a cool one. This takes some of the games that, like I mentioned, that really rely on special controls. It's got, what does it have included in it? It has Asteroids, Centipede, Major Havoc, Missile Command, Aka-R, Crystal Castles, Tempest, Millipede, Gravatar, Liberator, Asteroids Deluxe, and Space Duel.
Space Duel I throw in there.
All included. And the controls for all the different games are on the layout. There's a trackball in the center. There's five buttons laid across. And then there's the spinner.
Spinner on the right, like in Tempest. And it's the Tempest cabinet, which is a beautiful cabinet. It's one, that's one of the ones I actually would want to own if I had an arcade. I'd want a Tempest.
Yeah,
cabinet.
It looks like the Tempest. Yeah, they recreated the Tempest cabinet. So I think this is cool. This is a lot of games in there that you can't easily emulate or play properly without the control panel that was dedicated to it. And so this takes care of all that. I think this is really where the
light up marquee,
the benefit of something like Arcade 1-Up shines.
Yeah, they've got, this isn't just in the original days, we'll just give you Miss Pac-Man and a couple in Galaga and call it a day. We're going to give you more at this point. Aka-R, I didn't heard it because it looks like it was an unreleased prototype.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that was an unreleased one.
But so this is why I would want this. Asteroids are my favorite classic arcade games. I like Centipede a lot. I like Missile Command a lot. And I love Tempest. Like, it you got them all. Like, I don't want any other Atari games ever besides those four.
Right.
I'm good. Millipede, I like the regular Centipede better. Too much going on with Millipede. Crystal Castles is a fun little jaunt, but
I actually agree.
Major Havoc is an interesting experiment for a game. I like the game when I play it, but you got to get used to the controls.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. Major Havoc. Gravatar is decent. Liberator, I don't know what that game even is. So this has all the games I'd ever would want in this package here. Okay, on the overhead, my concern would be how am I playing Asteroids, though? Does it have the traditional five-button setup for Asteroids? You have rotating clockwise and counterclockwise, thrust, fire, and hyper, and hyperspace or whatever. You move around the screen real quick. You jump around. I guess it's called hyperspace.
It's hyper, yeah.
So I hope I can play it with the 5-button layout. I'm trying to tell, looking at the, trying to find the overhead.
My guess is that you can.
Well, there's two on the left that are kind of far apart, but then there's three on the right where it looks like it could be. I really hope if I hope they don't map the to the spinner. I really don't hope they map the rotation to the spinner.
No, I doubt it. There would be no reason for them to have that many buttons otherwise.
Having the three below it, though? But having the three below it would be thrust, fire, and hyperspace, though. That's why I'm getting scared. They have three on the right side. Give me the option, RK went up. I'll get a bit of that. Just give me the option to remap it. That's all. If not, I don't want to play Asteroids like that. The rotating would get really weird and funky, constantly going back and forth to me. Versus, and not as precise, I think, as, well, it's just a different feel.
I would have to say... almost 100% certain that they're mapping it to the buttons.
Okay. I'll trust you, because otherwise those two on the left are too far apart for... Because you use the two fingers like this, Ian. Pointer and middle for the rotate left and right.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you do it. You go... Beep, 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 beep. Sorry. I was trying to do the UFO voice. Or sound. Anyway, so that's that one. X-Men. X-Men Arcade has the 4-player game. Character designs based straight out of the legendary prior to the X-Men animated pilot. Wouldn't call it legendary. It's interesting. But that's pretty much the inspiration. Yeah, when you look at the characters, mm-hmm. It has Dazzler. I love Dazzler. So it has that. Then you also get Captain America and the Avengers, which is a fun game. And then the Avengers in Galactic Storm.
I don't know that game.
I don't know that game either.
I don't know that one. This also adds the online play that NBA Jam had.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So we could go at it. It's Colossus in there. Okay, Avengers and Galactic Storm was a 1995 fighting game developed and published by Data East. What? Oh, okay. It's the wacky looking one. Okay, I've seen this before. I have seen this either on a ROM. It's a fighting game with like weird sort of like kind of polygonal graphics. Okay, I've seen this one. It looks like garbage, but I've seen this one.
Oh, it sure does.
Yeah, it's not really sprite-based, it looks like. It's like PS1 Rise of the Robots sort of fighting graphics. Remember Rise of the Robots? That's kind of what it looks like.
Looks bad.
All right, so that one doesn't excite me as much as that one. What about Dragon's Lair, Ian?
Dragon's Lair is an interesting one for me because I love Dragon's Lair. This one has the trilogy. It has Dragon's Lair, Space Ace, and Dragon's Lair 2 Time Warp on it.
Dragon's Lair.
And they recreate the cabinet really nicely.
They got the little LED readout at the
top. Got the scoreboard that I love so much, and it's got the marquee that is trapezoidal. It's not flat across. That said, I don't know that I need to...
You already got the 1/6 one, right?
I love that fucking scale cabinet.
Like the 1/6?
It's 1 foot.
1 foot.
I really love that scale cabinet. And while this is cool, I don't... This falls under the... It's not doing anything special. There's no special controls. It's not like this is coming with a Laserdisc player.
Laser.
If this is... This would be neat if it was hackable to do other, run other Laserdisc games. That could be neat as like an all-in-one Daphne station. But at that point, personally for me, I would just want to get the actual Dragon's Lair cabinet. I think one of the things about Dragon's Lair is not just the game, if you actually like it, but it's the cabinet itself. It's having the full-size cabinet. It's big.
That's spendy nowadays.
Sure, it absolutely is.
That's probably a couple grand, I would think.
It absolutely is. But my lack of excitement is not because it's Dragon's Lair. I like Dragon's Lair, and I like how they did this cabinet. But it's a joystick game. And at that point, like I said, I kind of lose interest in these arcade one-ups if they're not using a specific control scheme that is hard to replicate.
Maybe $4,000 I'm looking at eBay. Holy shit.
It's not that much. I've done research into it. The ones on eBay are stupid.
Done looked for one?
I was bored once and I spent some time looking into it.
But these are getting more money. Like these are stuff like 20 years ago you could have got for $500 probably.
Sure.
$400. They're over $1,000 now, some of this stuff. So, okay, there's that one. I think that one is interesting because it has, like you said, has something different. It has a little LED readout. I wonder those. You think those speakers are actually both functional on the top? They put speakers. I'd hope.
I'd think they probably.
I'd hope
are,
it wasn't just for show.
I doubt it's for show.
I think this is going to sell. This is going to be the seller. This one is going to go. I think this one.
Which one?
Dragon's Lair.
Oh, sure.
This is going to sell more than you possibly would think. Like, oh, because people want this weird experience of playing something if they weren't around for potentially.
If I had more space, I'd be more interested, but it's easy for me to be like, no, I don't need this.
Ah, wait a few years. We're at Castle Ferguson, which sounds like you have a moat and a drawbridge.
It would
Castle
have a Ferguson. Moat, I promise you.
So anyway, so that's interesting. All right, next up, Killer Instinct is an interesting one. So Killer Instinct... It has a rare custom riser on it with rare. All these have custom risers, by the way. The Atari one does. So, Killer Instinct has Killer Instinct 1. Why wouldn't it? Killer Instinct 2. Then they throw in the pretty good Battletoads arcade game, which you don't see too often. Uncommon cabinet, and then they give you a bonus just to do it. Battletoads Double Dragon, which I guess will be
weird.
The Super Nintendo one, I'm guessing. Or Genesis, whatever. But they throw that in there just to give you another game. I mean, it doesn't hurt, but sure. It's not an arcade game, but they're just going to do that.
Yeah, that's not the first time they've done that, because there was the... I think it was the X-Men vs. Street Fighter cabinet where they threw in the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, like the Gems.
It was either War of the Gems or
both.
Mutant Apocalypse.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one, because I think the people that would be interested in this... Like my cousin who loved Killer Instinct in the arcade. Like the newer Killer Instinct people that are playing the new version, they might be too young to want this one. Maybe. It's an interesting offering. I don't think this will sell that well, if I had to imagine, versus some of the other ones. But it's interesting.
Yeah,
the cabinets. The Killer Instinct cabinet was never beautiful, as you can see.
No, and they do a decent job of again recreating it. But yeah, it's not like it was ever a cabinet that jumped out.
No. So it is what it is. So, in throwing Battletoads with it just as I can, I guess that's cool, but you buy this because you're a Killer Instinct fan. All right, and then we have the Pong four-player pub table. So, it's a cocktail style, not almost cocktail, but pub style, because it's circular and it has one, like, I guess, riser in the middle. Four-player Pong game. So, you get four spinners, you know, and then a button. So, you can play Pong... Quadra Pong, four players. Pong Doubles, Warlords.
I was gonna
say, go.
Warlords should be on
have the
there.
Button. Pong Sports. I'm not familiar with it. It sounds like some of these were these all arcade units, or these are like ones you bought for the TV? Circus Atari.
I like Circus.
They throw
Atari.
Tempest on it because they can, because they have a spinner. And Super Breakout. This to me looks like a gorgeous piece, because it does have that, you know, retro late 70s look to it. It just looks like nice. It looks like it's something you'd see in the late 70s. Because Atari had like their four-player like Atari football stuff, like had that same color scheme.
Right.
Like they had like the yellow and orange stripes and you know, the black and white, the white lettering on the black background. It looks gorgeous to me.
Oh, I just
not saying I want it. It looks gorgeous.
I must have missed you, heard you saying it, or it went in what ear, one ear, not the other. A Tempest?
Yes.
It includes Tempest.
Hey, it has a spinner, right?
Yeah,
and a button. There's two buttons. Look, on players 3 and 4, there's one button for Warlords.
Yeah.
And on players 1 and 2, there's two buttons. So Tempest, you have the fire and the whatever supercharged button.
Smart bomb or
smart
whatever
bomb,
they called it.
Smart spider charge. I don't know what it's called. I love Tempest. I don't know the name of it. So, this is nice. Purchase from partners. What is this going for? Best Buy. Okay. And pre-order. How much does this cost? $550 for that. A little bit more than I thought, but if it's well constructed, if that's made of wood and not just, what is it made of? Is it just
probably particle board?
Just particle board. That's a little spendy. You are getting four spinners though. They're probably hopefully quality spinners. I've never seen a spinner on an arcade one-up machine before though. $550, I thought it'd be maybe like $450. That's the only one you can pre-order. I don't think you can pre-order the rest so far.
That would be fun in a home bar. I could see that.
Put in your basement.
That would be cool.
So yeah, that to me is the
Warlords is so much fun.
Yes, very underrated game, Warlords. So that is one that stands out to me because it actually looks like a nice piece. It's the centerpiece of your living room or bar room.
Yeah.
Good old Atari products. All right. Anything else to add here? We haven't done one of these in a bit, but that's a nice offering. They're really upping the game. This isn't just like, oh, gave you Galaga, Pac-Man Plus, Pac-Man. You know, this is a nice offering of things here. You would agree?
Yeah, I agree. It's not so bad.
All right, Ian, we have a Patreon. How do you access the CU Podcast Patreon?
You go to patreon.com/CU Podcast. You check it out. You see if it interests you. You pay a little money. You get a little something in return. We do the full video podcast every week. You get that. I do a writing about once a week. This week, I just wrote about how I'm starting to learn how to make homemade ramen.
Okay.
I do a hangout once a month. That'll probably be a week from this weekend. And we put up these poll topics.
All right.
You can vote in.
In third place, at 28%, which is strong for third place, what sitcom would make a good video game? In second place, do you think that games that became popular during the pandemic, like Among Us, Phasmophobia, Fall Guys, will have staying power? I think I spelled that wrong. And then in first place, Ian, it's happened. What do you miss most about gaming conventions? It has happened, Ian. After 5 months or more, 6 months.
So I do miss gaming conventions quite a bit. When I'm in a busy year, for me, that would be like 7 or 8 conventions all told. I can get kind of tired of it in the day to day. But this past year has made me realize that I do really miss them, at least in moderation. I particularly missed Portland this year, Portland Retro Gaming Expo, and I missed Long Island. That was a really fun one we did.
Oh, I missed the pizza.
A year ago, this past summer. And what I miss is... you know, it sounds cheesy to say it, but I miss my friends. There are a lot of people that I talk to online that I kind of take for granted that I'm probably going to see them once or twice a year through these conventions. You know, we all do YouTube or podcasts or whatever. We all go and we sit at our booths and shake hands. And then afterwards, we all...
Shake hands, kiss babies.
Shake hands, kiss babies. And then afterwards, we all get to get together and, you know, see friends that we haven't seen in quite some time.
Yeah, we go out to eat. We hang out in a hotel room.
We play games and we generally act like, you know, the big nerds that we actually are. And I miss that. I miss seeing people like Norm and Alex and... Gerard and you know, all these people that otherwise we may not always have a chance to see every year. I also miss eating.
You miss eating, Ian? You don't eat at conventions?
Well, no, but I do. I mean, when I travel, one of the first things that, whether it's for business or pleasure, one of the first things I do is think about all the food that I have to make sure I get when I'm in that area.
The regional food or local restaurants.
Yeah. I it's no secret that I am a big fan of food, big eater, and you're laughing through me off, and that throws me off. So I always, for instance, I have eaten a stunningly small amount of fried cheese over the past year. Stunningly small amount of fried cheese. I always like to order mozzarella sticks when I go out of town.
I've had a mozzarella stick for like 5 years. I don't know the last time I had one. I think about it.
But whether it's getting, you know, good noodles in Portland or sandwiches in Portland at a place like Lardo, or ordering $40 worth of White Castle and getting good pizza when we're in Long Island.
You ordered $40 of White Castle?
Frank and I ordered $40 worth of White Castle and ate it in the lobby.
Could save a slider for Pat? Throw me a slider in?
We went through all of it.
I got the pizza.
So yeah, that's what I miss. I miss sitting around,
I miss the fucking friendlies when I go back and get my peanut butter cup Sunday. Miss that.
And this I actually talked about a little bit on the other podcast. I missed the hotel bar. I miss hotel bars. They're overpriced.
Some are good.
They're overpriced.
Some are good.
They're overpriced. They're always weird. They all smell the same. But you always see really interesting people in hotel bars. It's hard to not sit in a hotel bar for an hour and do some people watching and not walk away seeing something interesting.
Something weird happened. Maybe people cheating on their wives and husbands with each other. You do see weird shit.
Because when you go to a bar that you would choose to go to, or you go to your regular bar, there is a set group of people that have decided to go to that bar and make it their bar, their home, their place. But a hotel bar is a bar that everyone goes to because they're out of town and they don't know where a place they would be comfortable is. So they go down to the hotel bar to order food and order a drink. So it's a melting pot of all the most... of everyone. You can't say always the most interesting people because you're going to get boring people in there too. But everyone is there. Everyone comes in contact with the hotel bar. You're always going to
run into... see people from the conventions too.
Yeah, you see people from the conventions, yeah. But you're always going to run into people that you normally wouldn't run into in a hotel bar. It's kind of like an airport bar in that way. The things that I don't miss...
I like the quesadillas. I just like getting a quesadilla from whatever hotel I'm at because it's like comfort food. It's hard to fuck up a quesadilla. Just give me a quesadilla. Just give me a quesadilla. Just give it to me. Send it to my room, have it at a bar. I always get a quesadilla, sorry.
And then lastly, the one thing I don't really miss is I don't actually miss, like, the show floor. As time has gone on, I've been buying less and less. It's not to say that conventions aren't fun on the show floor, but for me personally, I'm looking for less items. And then the things that I'm looking for are getting harder to find. So the actual act of shopping on a convention floor is not... is pretty far back on my list of things that I miss.
I think I had...
It's all the people interactions and stuff that I miss.
I think the last couple conventions I went to, I struggled to find things to buy.
I always find a black and white Game Boy game at the very least to find. I find, like, one somewhere.
I'm buying, ephemera at this point. It's like, you know, the Super Mario Brothers Adventure books. Like, I find stuff like that now. Or even the weird controller stuff. I'm like, I have so many weird controllers. Someone offered me a controller at Long Island. I think I turned it down. It was like a joystick. Yeah, $5. I think I bought it for $5 because, like, I wouldn't buy it at 10 even. A box joystick. Like, I just don't have it anymore to buy a lot of this stuff. I just don't. Because I don't have a place to display it. Or, like, a little stuffed animal or something. Or a little, like, I like buying, like, from the artist alley or artist, like, the little... They make, like, the little earrings, or if I buy it for an 80 friend, or like a t-shirt, try to find like a t-shirt or something like that. That's the stuff I'll get.
And that's more what I look at these days when I'm actually at a convention too, is I look at the art and I try to find an artist to support or something like that. But it's almost never like video games that I'm actually hunting down at them.
Oh,
anymore.
I mean, because, you know, I try to calculate how many conventions I've been to since the past 10 years. It's got to be 60 to 80 conventions.
Yeah.
When you actually break it down, I'd probably have averaged 70 a year for the past like 6-7 years. And the other years probably did like other years I did. I think 1 year, 2016, I probably did like 10. I've done 10 some years. Anyway, I actually miss interacting with the people that listen to the podcast or watch my videos, because like you forget that there's like faces sometimes. I mean, you see crappy comments left by idiots, but that's the small minority of people. That's like less than 1% of the people. I understand that.
The online world feels a lot warmer when you have faces and at least one personal experience to link to a name on there.
Sure.
And it's been a while. Like, yeah.
It's been what, Ian?
It's been some time.
It's been a while. Oh, God.
Since we've been anyway, so it's nice to see that you. I mean, you know it's there, but you don't get that in person. Hey, you know, I've been listening to your podcast for like 3 years, or I love this video. Or it's good to see the joy in people's faces versus just, you know, comments here and there. That's good. Yeah, and yes, I love seeing, of course, Norm, my roommate at a lot of these past conventions. I don't have a lot of close friends in San Diego. It's very small. My good friends are all around the U.S. at this point. A lot of them are video creators, people like Andre, you know, Dan, Norm. So I don't get to see my friends. I was planning on visiting Norm in Kansas City. Couldn't do it because of the pandemic. I was going to go, I'll come out like some weekend, just hang out with you and Kristen. Couldn't even do it. So
yeah.
Like now I feel bad because I wish I forced myself to do that. Like, you know, like whatever I was planning for, like maybe late winter, to do that. So it's tough. It's tough to do that. Just talk to people on the phone every now and then versus, you know, at a good convention season, it's like, hey, I just saw you a few weeks ago. Now I'm seeing you again. So it's like you get a chance to really spend some time with people versus just seeing someone once a year, at most. So, that's a big one. I miss the arcades. I always like going into the arcades. At these conventions, because there's not a lot of chance for me to go to arcades regularly. I don't go to a lot of barcades and stuff like that. And I do like to travel and see different parts of people. One of the things about the U.S. that is good is that it is really different cultures in certain parts of the U.S. And it is nice to go.
It's a big damn country.
It's a big country. That person's going to yell at us again for disrespecting big country. But like when I go back to Jersey or go to Long Island, that's like my people. So, oh, this I remember. people a little bit closer to my personality, you know, in tone. It's a little bit louder and a little bit, hey, Pat. Like, you get that from people. It's like, but you go to the Midwest, you know, you don't get that. If you go to California, you don't get that. So it is nice to see that. And yes, the food. I do miss the food. I need Long Island pizza again, or Jersey pizza. So I do miss all that stuff. I do miss that.
Yeah.
But it does, not that it helps keep you going, but you do realize that, yeah, a lot of the bullshit online, going back to when people tried to come ask us for Diablo Immortal, the reason I knew it wasn't a big deal, because no one gave a shit when we went to the conventions that year. No one said to us, oh, how dare you say, no, not a one said that. The only thing was talked about was like, oh, those people are crazy.
We had a Q&A question once, and I don't even feel like I don't think they were pleased with us about doing it, but they heard us out and they seemed to accept it, and they weren't rude about it when they asked us.
Was that at SoCal?
I can't remember.
It was like 3-4 months later.
Yeah, but there was one, and it was fine.
Yeah, but that's it.
Yeah.
They
were respectable.
The comments are bullshit for the most part when it comes to it. So anyway, so yeah, that's what I miss, and hopefully. God, at this point, I'm thinking maybe August. We are semi back to normal in August. Knock on fake wood, particle board, and our Pong pub player wood. We'll be back to normal as soon as we get these vaccines in our arms, and we do that. All right, we got some voicemails we're going to listen to. You can go to anchor.fm/thecdpodcast, and you can leave us voicemails. Try to be concise and quick, maybe under 20 seconds. Definitely not over 30 seconds, because I might have to cut you off. Keep the flow. Going here. So this first one, I put WTF for this person, so I might cut them off from Brandon here.
Hey, Pat and Ian, big fan of the show. Have two questions. First one's for Pat. Did you really hook up with that Baywatch model?
I don't know when I ever had a Baywatch model anywhere in my life, so I don't know who he's referring to there.
Okay.
That's why I would put WTF. Is he referring to the Alicia Dragoon video? Is he referring to Denise, who showed up in a few videos? I don't know.
And the second one is for Ian.
Oh, no.
I know you're a huge music buff, so I'm wondering if you've ever listened to... any David Hasselhoff records.
Okay, that's why I put WTF here from Brandon.
Yeah, love the Hoff.
Love the Hoff?
Love the Hoff.
All right. Next is, let's see. What happened to Josh here? I had Josh down, but I don't see him. From Karen.
Happy holidays, Pat and Ian. This question kept losing the Patreon polls, but I liked it, so I'll ask it again here. Maybe that's cheating, maybe not.
Oh, it's going to be cheating, Karen. But
it's fine. We'll let you cheat, Karen.
So what do you miss about going to conventions?
Oh.
Well, it's funny you say that, Karen, because we just did a segment about that. So go back and listen to that segment, everyone.
But thank you.
From 5 minutes before this.
Thank you for trying to cheat that one through.
The entire atmosphere and the sense of community.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to go to one maybe next year if COVID ever goes away. Anyway, again, happy holidays.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Get back to N64 writing, Karen. She's writing for the certain N64 guidebook. All right. Skipping this one because I said to skip it. This is from...
Skip it.
A zibba 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 and a zibba zibba.
Hey, Pat and Ian. What do you guys like that isn't retro? Let's say PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, or Nintendo Wii forward. Do you guys have the most fun with particular consoles? Are there any newish franchises that you secretly enjoy? My wife and I are primarily retro gamers, but the FromSoft games like Dark Souls on the PS4 crack our favorite games list.
Chad, it sounds like you're in a tavern with that echo there. Well, Ian likes the PS3. He's got the PS4.
I have a PS4 that I don't use very much at all. But this Nintendo Switch, obviously, I really, really like the Nintendo Switch. And people think I'm a huge Nintendo fanboy, and they often think I'm a Sony fanboy. But the truth of the matter was, I had a 360, and I really enjoyed the 360. I haven't gone back to it recently. I just don't have time. But that was a system that really got me back into gaming regularly, and despite the fact that it was, you know, built like shit, and I spent, you know, days and days and days repairing them at Luna, I do actually kind of have a fondness in memory for the 360 console.
This is from Darian. It says to start 20 seconds in here.
Keeps me on the way. Phil trains. Keeps me. My question for you guys is, what's your earliest video game memory? My son's still a little bit too young to play games, but I'm always kind of contemplating what would be his first video game, whether or not I'd show it to him or somebody else.
All right, what's your earliest video game memory, Ian?
I have three. I don't know what the earliest one is. I remember sitting on my grandfather's lap and him showing me how to play Pac-Man on the 5200. I remember my mom showing me how to play Phoenix in a laundromat. And I remember going to... and I have many memories of this arcade, foggy memories because I was young, but there was an arcade in the Eastern Hills Mall called Fun and Games in Buffalo, New York, and playing the Star Wars arcade sit-down game with my dad is one of my earliest memories. All three of those are like probably right around the same time.
Have to be, let's see, we got the XT in probably early 86. It was definitely winter. I remember it being cold when we went to that computer store. Like a really one of those computer stores, like in like a fucking little office. Remember those little things that guys have set up? Before that, probably Atari at my cousin's, but I think before that was the ColecoTel Star Ranger. I think it was that.
Oh,
my father had it set up upstairs on a little black and white TV. That might have been it. I might have been probably like 4 years old. That was probably it. Next is from Jonathan.
Hey guys. This is Jonathan, and I've been a fan listening to the show since day one when you guys were in Pat's bedroom. And so I want to preface this with
phrasing.
I love the show, and I do not want it to end. It really is. It's my drive to and from work. It's awesome. But have you had any discussions as to whether or not there's an exit plan for the show? Does one of you leave? Do you both leave? Like, has there been any discussion about this at all? I'm just really curious. Take it easy, guys. Thanks a lot.
You're an interloper, Jonathan. We have not had a discussion yet. We were supposed to at some point. What we would do if one or both left the show, or could it continue on, and what form? Would there be another host? We have not had a discussion.
Yeah, we don't really know.
We'll have to have the discussion soon, in case something happens. What if one of us dies? You know what happens? I mean, I did the show by myself for like 5 to 6 months when Ian was out with his sickness. So obviously, it can happen with one person. We could discuss what it would look like, or if there would be a place for Pat. Who does Ian drag into Castle Country every week, or would he do it from his place? You know, would he zoom in people? We get at the conversation. Do you have a replacement in mind for me, Ian? Who would you kick to me to the side? Who could fill Pat's 11 and a half shoes? Mostly 11, but sometimes 11. Mostly 11.
I don't have any idea.
A small 11 and a half, but mostly 11 for the ladies. Wink. No. All right, this is a grading question from Anthony. What?
Hey, Pat and Ian. Tony from Massachusetts. Been listening for about 4 years.
Hey, Tony!
You guys are part of my Wednesday morning commute, so I definitely appreciate that. Pat, my question for you is, I know you guys talked a little bit about the recent surge in grading of sealed games, things of that nature. Do you have any intention of grading the Golden Gray NWC cards anytime soon or in the in the future at some point? I'd love to hear your feedback on that. And again, guys, thank you for the content. Love your show.
Thanks, Tony. I would only get them graded if I was forced to do it, if I sold them. If it was one of those situations where, yeah, I'll give you a lot of money for it, but I want to make sure it's graded a certain percentage, then I would do it. Otherwise, there's no point in doing it. There's just none.
Yeah.
Plus, it's weird setting something off. They're worth so much money now to set them off and have other people handle them. It'd be kind of weird. Pat always brings up his NWCs. Well, Tony brought him up. Tony! All right, next is from Craig.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Craig from Seattle, longtime listener, first-time caller. While listening to the most recent podcast, I heard all the praise given to one Zack Snyder, deservedly so. It got me thinking, is it time to reboot the Care Bears? And if so, what would a Zack Snyder cut look like? I love the show. Keep on keeping on.
Slow-mo magic sprinkles and, you know.
Very, very blue. Very, very, like, that dark purplish-blue color that he uses a lot.
Desaturated or whatever the hell.
Yeah, everything would look like Grumpy Bear.
Super, super realistic. Not super realistic. It's already hyper realism, I guess, with Care Bears. I'm trying to do a Watchmen comparison, failing hard here. just trying to think how we ruin Watchmen, how I can ruin Care Bears. And it's not working here. This is from Sean.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Sean coming to you from Washington. I have a question for both of you. What kind of audio setup do you guys have hooked up to your video game consoles? Do you use headphones?
A nice Sean, are you hiding out somewhere? Are you on the run here? Are you in the lamb?
A pair of speakers? Subwoofer, perhaps? Or do you guys just use the audio coming from your TV?
Cops are 2 minutes out. Guys. Sean, how do you do it?
I use a very basic soundbar. I have nothing special.
Soundbars can be good. They're not that much money, like $60-$70 for one that has a woofer in it and a little...
Yeah, I don't do anything special audio wise. Much to my brother's
chagrin,
because he builds. I mean, that's what my brother does in his spare time is he builds sound systems and speakers, and he's really good at it.
I don't think you ever told me that.
I don't. Yeah, he runs like big bass heavy rave sound systems.
All right, want to do one more?
One more, and then I'm done.
One more. Okay.
One and done.
This is a good question.
Hi, Pat and Ian. I'm Stefan from Arizona, and my question is to Ian specifically.
Oh.
What is the most amount of stuff someone has bought from you in one transaction at Luna? Is it something where someone came in and said, yes, hi, I'd like to buy 10 of your Xbox 360s, please, and also I'd like to pay entirely in $5 bills? Thanks, guys. Love the show. Please keep it up, and please rant more about water-rated games or graded games. Bye.
Okay, this is interesting, because is it quantity of products or the amount or a combination? Well, I guess we have to be quantity.
I mean, yeah,
has someone come in and said and bought 100 games before?
I'm trying to think of what some of the longest tickets I've ever seen have been. So there was, I'm trying to remember how many he bought.
I mean, I bought a lot of manuals before, but now the
there
count
are people
that?
Who have bought a lot of things 50 from manuals, us before. 60 manuals. I would say probably. So there was I think the most I've ever sold in one transaction is probably something like. Yeah, that's about right. It was probably about 200 PlayStation 2 games. We used to have a guy who would come up from Tijuana, and he ran a store down there.
Oh, so it was okay.
So he would come up and buy a ton of our cheap games because the cheap video games are pretty expensive in Mexico. If you live in Mexico, if you've ever traveled down to Mexico and gone into a video game shop, even once you factor in the currency exchange and all that, video games are still very expensive down in Mexico.
So they weren't bought a lot brand new.
Well, and I just don't think there's really I don't know how much, but I'm just not sure what the distribution is like down
sense.
There. So I remember, you know, when the 3DS was popular, going there and seeing a game that would have been $40 brand new in the U.S. was going for the equivalent of $60 in Mexico. So this guy would come up and buy a lot of our games, and the thing was is he was really nice. He never asked for a discount because he would go down and raise the price of all of them by $3 to $5. So
he's buying like $3 games, something like 8 or 10 maybe?
Yeah, he'd buy the $3 to $8 games or the $3 to $5 games and sell them for, you know, $8 to $10. And that's what he did. And the one day he came in and I just remember and he was cool about it, and he tipped me, but I was there like half an hour late because he just kept finding. He came in late and he just kept finding stuff. And I mean, he walked out with like three huge bags. It was probably about 200 games.
200 games?
Yeah, because I remember the sale was probably in the vicinity of, it was probably about $1,000, and he never really bought anything over five. So that's 200. That might even be 250 games, depending on how many $3 games he bought.
So games like a few bucks at most.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So,
do I still hold the record for biggest monetary at one time?
I mean, that's if you want to count that as a sale, sure.
It's a sale. I mean, yeah. It happens.
I always consider that a private sale.
Okay.
I would say in terms of a taxed sale. but
I could try trouble.
you are probably. Yeah, you're probably among the biggest purchase.
That was 11 years ago already.
Yeah.
How about that? Spring 2010, yeah. After I moved here. Scraped that money together, and boy, that paid off in one way. I mean, I was living almost check to check. I had a 401k, but I didn't want to break into the 401k to buy a fucking video game.
Sure.
So I don't count the 401k, you don't count as money. Like, if you got to dip in your 401k, you're in trouble. And you shouldn't, for any reason at all, dip into it. Unless you can pay yourself back. Then we're getting into finances. 401ks, depending on your plan, you can basically you loan yourself the money and pay yourself back interest. You use it as a credit base. But to actually take a payout, you lose a ton of money on your 401k. You get taxed on it, and you get a penalty on top of it. So don't touch your 401k. Was that it? Past financial advice? There was a lot of financial advice this podcast.
That's it.
There was a lot about investments and things like that. Thanks so much, everyone. This was fun. And hey, and the 2 days ago, me and Ian were like, we're not sure we can do a podcast. There's nothing happening. There's nothing going on. We're good. We're good. We had fun. So, yeah, I'll be on Twitch every Wednesday night around roughly 7 p.m. Eastern is when I do it, 4 Pacific, maybe 4 to 5, somewhere there. We watch 80s commercials. We have fun. I'm also on Cameo, cameo.com/PatContry. If you want me to give a shout out to everyone there. You got to get into Cameo. You got to do some Cameo, no?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I've had people ask me if I'm going to do it or if that's
just
a joke.
Then do it. Undercut my prices. Go for it. Dude, there's like, I saw guys like, it's weird. I've seen prices where it's like, you know, local hockey player like in a league in like, you know, upstate Michigan or whatever, doing like 99 cent ones. He's doing a ton of them because they're so cheap, or a dollar, like,
sure,
or $2. It's interesting. I'm not saying you should do the $1,000 Dennis Rodman ones, or you know, just do whatever. All right, that's it. I'm gonna eat some taco leftovers with bitchin' sauce.
Bitchin' sauce is good.
Which I didn't know was based on almonds, I believe. Yeah, that's the base almonds. Of it. And the vegan cheese. The vegan mozzarella cheese, I forgot to say, which I'm getting used to the taste because it's the primary ingredient is it's coconut oil. Mm-hmm. Then they add some cheese type of flavor in there and tricks your body into thinking it's cheese. It's still not cheese, though. Vegan cheese is terrible for the most part.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
All right. We'll see you later, everyone.
Bye-bye.